Hey, Roros, do you ever call up Royally Obsessed on Alexa?
It's one of the easiest ways to listen to the pod. You can hear our latest episode every week there, thanks to Amazon Music, which has a full catalog of podcasts, including Royally Obsessed.
All you have to do is say, Alexa, play Royally Obsessed on Amazon Music. Oh no, mine is listening to me say that right at this moment.
A royal reminder, new episodes drop every Thursday. Tune in on Amazon Music. Now, on to the show.
Please rise for their majesties of Royally Obsessed, the podcast for all things royals.
Three cheers for His Majesty the King.
Welcome back to Royally Obsessed. I'm Roberta.
And I'm Rachel.
And we have a jam-packed episode for you coming up. But first, as always, follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast. Also send us a note, info@gallerypodcasts.com. That's Gallery Podcasts with an S on the end. Rachel, it's so good to see you again. I feel like big hugs all around. It's been a really tough few days. So just wish I could hug you through the screen.
I know. I feel like there's just a lot to discuss, but it is a moment and space here to still process the news of last week for sure. And we do want to talk about what is coming up. We're joined by Elizabeth Holmes, who we've shared quite a few royal moments with, to unpack Princess Catherine's statement from last week and reflect on the monarchy's future as it undergoes one of its greatest periods of stress. We also are reflecting on the Duke of Edinburgh's service of Thanksgiving and a small statue debacle, and we're looking forward to Easter, which is coming up faster than I could ever have anticipated.
It's early this year, right? It feels so early.
Yeah. Feels a hair odd to be celebratory this week, but we also need to honor a very huge milestone for me and Roberta. It is our 200th episode.
That is absolutely mind-blowing. I can't believe we've done this 200 times.
I can't either, Roberta. Like 200 weeks of Royally Obsessed together. That's insane.
I know. It's so incredible. Our producer, Judy, who is the best, put together the most fun little look back for us at the last 200 episodes.
Play the tape. Hey, I'm Rachel.
I'm Roberta.
And we are Royally Obsessed.
Roros, we're thrilled to welcome Andrew Morton to the podcast, Samir Hussein,
Elizabeth Holmes,
Tessie Ojo,
Chris Jackson,
Tom Jennings,
Tina Brown,
Victoria Murphy, Patrick Jepson,
Omid Scobie,
Clive Irving, Afia Hagen,
Emily Nash,
Aminatou So,
Lainey Louis,
Katie Nichol, Micah Meyer,
Tessa Dunlop,
Bethan Holt,
William Hansen,
Tracy Borman,
Sam Sanders. Rachel and I are recording together for the first time ever.
Wait, there was a butt tap?
There was a butt tap. Rachel and I together in Boston.
Charlotte's sunglasses from Wimbledon. That, for me, was the absolute high of the week.
We are recording from the Londoner Hotel in Leicester Square.
And it was delightful to see the sheep sweater in person without the case on it.
I love the name of this tiara. The Girls of Great Britain and Ireland. Welcome the 9th Earl Spencer to the podcast.
God save the pod.
Cheers. Cheers. I am gazing into your non-digital eyes, and this is so incredible, Roberta.
I can reach out.
I can touch you.
And hold your hand.
Oh my God. So much love to Judy for putting that together, we have to say. Shout out. It is wild to me that we started this together in March 2020.
It's 4 years.
Like, it was a global pandemic.
Yeah. And I feel like we're actually probably way past 200 with our bonus episodes, too, which That's we recorded true. When every huge breaking news moment happened. I feel like we've
lived through a lot.
We have. We've seen, two monarchs. It's really kind of the most tumultuous time for the royals that we've really tried to navigate. And I also want to say, which I know Rachel will echo, our thanks to this community for making it so enjoyable all these years.
Absolutely, absolutely. Cheers to that. I feel like a perfect segue to the royal refreshment.
Cheers.
And now it's time for the weekly royal cocktail.
I am not holding anything currently because I am going to an Easter brunch on Saturday this weekend. So Easter is obviously Sunday, but we're doing a Lambrusco brunch.
I love that.
Lambrusco. It's like the chilled red wine of Italy, and it's Lambrusco season coming up. I mean, spring and summer when the weather gets warmer. So we're doing a brunch for that. And I'm going with my mom and a few friends. So really excited.
Out to a restaurant or is it?
It's actually at a little local wine bar that's brand new. So I'm it has a beautiful glassed-in greenhouse area that we'll be brunching under. What are your Easter plans though, Rachel?
Oh, Roberta, that sounds so lovely. And the weather must be so nice down there. It's getting warmer here, but it's not.
Not all
like t-shirt or shorts weather or anything like that. Dress weather. We are headed to Massachusetts, our sort of go-to plan, but we will be celebrating with my sister, my parents, and Finn is just like cannot wait for an egg hunt. He also is very worried already about like, will his cousins take the eggs? I was like, we'll count them and make sure everyone has the exact same amount. Like, let's just settle down. But we're having those conversations. I'm looking forward to getting away, and I have a long weekend. I have Monday off, so.
Oh, that's great. And my niece and nephew are also so excited for the Easter egg hunt. I think we're going to try to go swimming if it's warm enough. We'll see.
Yeah, so. I'm sure it will be. It looks warm there. I know we'll see. A little bit north, though, so it's not always.
It's just so gray and cold out right now that I can't imagine. Like, I'm
packed that bathing suit, though. You probably have one there.
Yeah. Yes. I have a whole closet of clothes.
Well, moving on, we have a couple of listener notes that we want to share. We've heard from so many of you. We feel so honored. We just want to say this, that this community reaches out to us to navigate the highs and lows of being royal watchers. Last week, of course, struck a chord with all of us, and it goes without saying that all of our thoughts right now are with the Princess of Wales. We got this note from Barbara in Montana. She writes, thank you so much for the bonus episode. I looked there first for comfort and community after hearing Kate's heartbreaking message. I am so sad that she was subjected to such nonsense while dealing with a cancer diagnosis. Honestly, I thought she looked pale and frail, perfectly understandable. She goes on, after my own cancer diagnosis 6 years ago, I wanted only to withdraw into my little world. I certainly didn't want my health news broadcast, even to friends and extended family. It shakes one to the core, and it was only when I felt more secure that I was going to realize a positive outcome that I felt okay sharing. In her situation, it's impossible to think she can be adequately shielded and protected at this very tender time, but I hope everyone close to her does their very best to let her decide when she's ready to move forward. In the meantime, let us leave the poor woman alone. Finally, she adds, I love your podcast, have been a fan for several years. I think you can make a difference for her by continuing to set a good example for the rest of us. I think we all need an extra royal cocktail this week and a heartfelt santé for the princess. Mm. Such a nice note. We got one more that we wanted to share from Liz. We had shared a note from her after the coronation last year. She wrote, last year after the Cori, I wrote you both to share that my mom and I woke up early that morning to watch it together. I made homemade scones for our early breakfast and we ate coronation chicken sandwiches for lunch. A mere week later, my mom died after a few short months of dealing with stage 4 cancer. Mm. The coronation is one of my last joyous memories with my mom. She adds, I was so moved and saddened by Catherine's announcement, and I can't even imagine what it's been like for her young family. The entire time of speculation and memes left me feeling uneasy. Even the royals deserve time and privacy to process such a scary diagnosis. I feel bad she was essentially backed into a corner to share this news with the world. Thank you for your continued respect and grace on your show. Mm. These notes, we are thrilled you all can find solace in this community, and we feel the same from all of you.
Totally. And how cancer affects so many people. If you have written us and we haven't gotten to it yet, we promise we are saving up our notes and we will get to it. But oh my gosh, my heart goes out to both of you, Liz and Barbara.
Yeah, we did want to talk about the timing of Kate's announcement, which I can't even remember. It's been such a blur. Did we talk about this too much last week in our bonus episode? Just that it really does seem like Kate and William did time it to the kids' school break.
Yeah, I also thought about how they had always kind of made Easter their goalpost for their from that original announcement in January about Kay undergoing surgery. And so I think this might have always been the plan. It's not as if they were really pushed. Maybe the video was something they thought of in that interim. But I do feel like Easter was always going to be the time when we heard from them. And that's what happened.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you again, everyone, for writing in. And we want you guys to keep those notes coming.
Now, this week in royal history.
All right, this week in royal history. A more recent history item. 3 years ago, Prince Philip passed away on April 9th, 2021. which set Operation Fourth Bridge in motion, which we all remember. But 1 year later, his service of Thanksgiving took place on March 29th, 2022 at Westminster Abbey. That was 2 years ago. The main reason for this 1 year later service of Thanksgiving, a lot of his funeral wishes couldn't be carried out due to COVID. For example, the Duke of Edinburgh recipients lining the entryway to the Abbey. There were 1,800 people, almost 2,000 people in attendance at the Abbey versus just 30 at the funeral. We all remember those really slimmed down, spaced out. You know, the image of the Queen sitting alone in the pew at St. George's Chapel. I mean, that will forever live rent-free in my head.
Seared in our minds, yeah.
Yeah. I went back and reminded myself of the service of Thanksgiving for Prince Philip. I loved the trumpeters, their like over the knee boots that they wear with the trumpet that has all of this like tapestry hanging from it. It was just really, the image of it is so striking. The singing from the choir, it's so, so beautiful. But I also especially wanted to remind everyone about this clip. The Dean of Westminster is talking about the late Duke of Edinburgh.
In Westminster Abbey, where he made promises that defined a life of willing duty and spirited service, we give thanks for His Royal Highness the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh. A man of rare ability and distinction, rightly honoured and celebrated, he ever directed our attention away from himself. He put privilege to work and understood his rank as a spur to service. Working at pace, with so many claims on his attention, he encouraged us to focus, as he was focused, on the things that matter. His was a discipline and character that seized opportunity and overcame obstruction and difficulty. We recall with affection and respect the sustained offering of a long life lived fully.
I feel like those words that echo the sentiment that Philip really took himself out of the equations for so much of the time and really put the work forward. It rings so true, right? Of the Queen and Philip.
Of course. And much of the family as a whole, for sure.
Yeah. We all remember Queen Camilla and Anne wore shades of Edinburgh green. It was so striking, that dark green, the emerald green. The Queen also had a brooch given to her by Philip from 50 years ago in the 60s. The Queen was escorted in by her son, Prince Andrew. This was when all of the Epstein stuff was really hitting a fever pitch, coming to light. And it marked her first major public appearance after experiencing mobility issues and testing positive for COVID-19. I forgot that this all kind of happened all at once. And so she was returning to the scene, but with Andrew, which really raised our eyebrows in the worst way.
I remember that being, it was such a moment that we were all watching for this whole occasion. And then that just soured a lot of it for many.
The upside, though, was George and Charlotte made an appearance, which was a surprise to us. And Kate in that striking black and white polka dot dress, which felt like such a nod to Diana, if you click this picture that I linked to.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
I want to say Charlotte gets the best moment from the service when she realizes that the cameras are on her and she puts plasters on, this really quick smile. Play that little video for yourself, Rachel.
Oh, my gosh. All right. I'm doing it right now in real time.
Oh, yeah. It's like such a quick, but also like a little uneasy. The grin spreads. But
the
like,
grin
ah!
looks so uneasy.
It's like the Jumbotron moments, right? You're like, oh, shoot. Oh, shoot.
Probably many more Jumbotron moments to come, honestly. No Harry and Meghan, though, at this service. Of course, we had the Platinum Jubilee coming up. It was only 2 months away at this point. This was at the end of March. That would be in June. So they were on their way, just not yet. I did want to say this of the moment update that you so wonderfully pointed out, Rachel. This story is so strange, but Prince Philip, this 13-foot statue is reportedly depicting Prince Philip, but it's going to be removed by the Cambridge Council. I don't want to be mean about the statue, but there's just something about it. There's just no resemblance to Prince Philip. I'll say that. Everyone can go look it up themselves. I feel like a little bit frightening. That's just my opinion. It's called The Dawn. The cost of the statue was $150,000 to put up. The council feels that not only is it unsightly, but they never got planning permission to put it up. And so they need to remove it, which I don't think anyone's going to be mad about that. What do you think?
Fascinating. Yeah, I think it doesn't do justice, nor does it strike me as related to Prince Philip when I see it.
It's like a man in a graduation cap, but there's no face, there's no features.
Yeah, really... I need to see the placard, I guess, but I will never see the placard because it's being taken down.
All right, and now on to our chat with Elizabeth Holmes.
Roros, as we're sure you all know, Elizabeth Holmes is a longtime journalist turned royal commentator and best-selling author. She spent more than a decade on staff at the Wall Street Journal before her Webby-honored Instagram Stories series called So Many Thoughts began nearly 7 years ago. In 2020, she also published her first book, the New York Times bestseller, HRH, So Many Thoughts on Royal Style. We've known Elizabeth since we took the reins of the pod in 2020 and have gone through so many major royal moments together. From Earthshot in Boston to the coronation last May, it felt incredibly fitting to invite you to join this week so we can reflect on this monumental news together. But it is so nice to see you. I wish different circumstances that we were discussing, but it's nice to see you.
I'm so glad to be here with you girls.
How are you holding up in the wake of Friday's news?
You know, it was a shock, right? It came as a shock. I got a heads up a little bit before it was public, and I just sort of sat there in my car and I thought, oh my goodness, like it came as a shock. And I think we're all still very much processing this because it's not just about what happened on Friday, right? It's what's been going on this entire year for weeks and weeks now, and wrapping your head around it as a journalist and as somebody who is deeply familiar with the inner workings of the royal family, I hate this saying, but we are in unprecedented times.
Yeah, totally. Well, we want to say thank you first off because your Substack explainer on Kate's video that was released Friday is super comprehensive and a must read for anyone trying to digest what went down. You can go ahead and subscribe at somanythoughts.substack.com if you want to read if you haven't already. We want to know, Elizabeth, what was your reaction then and what are your takeaways now?
My goodness. My reaction, you know, was first on a very human level, you know, seeing Kate as a woman that we have all followed for many, many years now, as, you know, a 42-year-old mother of three, having to sit there on a bench in a garden and in one long continuous video tell us all that she has cancer. And my mind went to all of the, you know, sort of dizzying speculation over the last couple of weeks that led to this moment, that led to, you know, she didn't have to do it this way, but she sort of did, you know. And just on a human level, my heart really hurt at this development, at this news. But I felt a certain, there was something about the video that was so human that I thought, my goodness, okay, we have returned to earth with all of this, right? With news of this nature, there's no way, right, to ever absorb it without any kind of, I don't know, real emotion behind it, but also like, okay, well, here we are. Like, this is what's going on. It answers a lot of questions because, as I'm sure you all know, you felt this too. Like, these last several weeks, it's just, I kept watching it and I was like, wait, what is happening? What's going on over there? And I heard from people in corners of my life that I haven't heard from about royal stuff ever, right? I've gotten so many texts, people who are so invested in this. And so, I don't know, there was something about the video on Friday, the way that it landed. My heart broke for Kate and her kids and William and the whole royal family. But also I was like, oh, okay, wow, this sort of starts to make sense.
Yeah, definitely. And it definitely was a choice to film it and have her on camera, I think, speaking directly to camera. Do you feel like now that you've had time to sit with it, you have takeaways that you didn't realize on Friday? Like, are there more things that you have kind of picked up since the weekend?
Yeah, I'm really trying to hold space for like many things can be true. And, you know, I think I remain alarmed at the role of the internet in all of this. And as you guys know, I mean, we are people who hang out on the royal internet. Mm-hmm. And it is often charged. It's a complicated place. Conversations get heated very, very quickly, right? It's a pretty intense place. And the way that this spilled over from that sort of corner of the internet into the mainstream and then was picked up by the mainstream media and the legitimacy that that reporting lended to all of this speculation and the way that just churned and churned and churned. And that's one side of it. And then the other side of it is I do think that, you know, we need to look at Kensington Palace and the response that they had and their communications strategy here. And there were real problems. You know, there were real problems with their response. And I do look back in hindsight and have a little bit more sympathy because obviously Will and Kate and the people that work for them were processing this. They were trying very hard, I'm sure, to think of the kids in all of this, right? But, you know, they did themselves no favors at a couple of turns here.
Yeah, I did really like what you said about that, where you can look back at like sort of the photo debacle and the farm shop footage and how you see it a little bit more sympathetically with hindsight, because they were really, it was so complicated and this really that overused word unprecedented, but that's what we're in right now, unprecedented times. But you did mention the differences, you know, how Kensington Palace navigated this. And it is a stark contrast to how Buckingham Palace treated Charles's cancer diagnosis. Similar circumstances, but a totally different approach. What do you feel like are the biggest learnings here? And why was it so essential for Kate to come on and talk to camera about her diagnosis?
Yeah, so it's wild, right? That Charles is going through something so similar that you can hold that up and say like, well, here's another way you could have done it. And I think on the surface, you know, there's so many similarities, right? These are two people who went into the hospital for very different procedures. And, you know, in that process were diagnosed with cancer. And when they, you know, chose to share that diagnosis and how they chose to talk about their treatment and how much we've seen them since, you know, there are a lot of parallels. But in writing my newsletter, I was like, wait a minute, this is also very different, mm-hmm. right? Charles is the king. There are expectations around his visibility. There is a need for him to be seen in a way that, you know, yes, Kate is very popular and people want to see her, but it's a different role. They, Will and Kate are not king and queen yet. What's more is that her initial procedure was much more intense than Charles's, very routine from what I understand. And so she was recovering from this major surgery that required a lengthy hospital stay. And recovering while receiving then this additional diagnosis is very different. And then you just add in there the three kids. And that sort of, my heart just breaks at that. I am a mother of three myself. I cannot imagine the very difficult situation they were in, having to talk about this with their children and then, you know, have them process it before they sort of release it to the world. So yes, there are similarities, but I also think there are differences. I think the main thing is, you know, there's that saying that it's not the crime, it's the cover-up that gets people. And the ways in which Kensington Palace responded here, again, with the benefit of hindsight and understanding now what we do, I see them as trying to shut it down, shut mm-hmm. down the fear. You know, they were not prepared on February 27th when William backed out of that service to respond. It's amazing to me that they came out when they did and said, you know, he's not going to be here for personal matters. Kate's recovery is going well. And I remember seeing that on February 27th and thinking, oh, okay, well, that was smart. They're trying to get out ahead of it. But clearly they did not. And the internet did what the internet does, but to a degree that I don't think any of us had seen. And that churned and churned, as I said. And then, you know, and then came that photograph, that family photograph. And on one hand, nobody was asking or expecting for a photograph of the family on Mother's Day. I do think that the internet had reached a place where they wanted I hate this, quote unquote, proof of life shot of her. And by releasing that photograph that was so clearly edited, they fanned the flames to a degree that it's hard to overstate. And then from there, right, the apology, which was not really an apology, you know, it was an admission that she edits photos, but an apology for the confusion around it. I think that was trying to shut it down, which it did not, right? And then we had the walk at the market on Saturday in Windsor, and that footage that, again, I think they were trying to just shut it down and to show that she's there and she's recovering and to buy this woman time and space that she so desperately wanted. And I am sympathetic to that, but it did nothing to shut it down in the digital age. And this idea that you can have a comms team that is not, you know, that is outmatched, right, by the internet, and of course anybody would be, but I think this period in royal history will be dissected for years and years to come. There's lots of learnings here.
Yeah, it just felt like such a turning point, this statement to camera again. And it felt like it was a moment with Catherine. I mean, we've heard since that she wrote the majority of the speech, if not all of it. And it was a moment of her really reclaiming her voice. It felt like it was so powerful to have that. I also wanted to ask you just about, you know, some of the information that's come out subsequently about Charles and Kate and how they've really kind of struck up this bond during this time. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's so interesting because obviously the news dropped Friday night and I was like, well, what are the Sunday papers going to say? Because if you follow royal news, you know that the Sunday papers, in particular the Sunday Times, they're sort of often reflecting the sentiment that the palace sources would like out there. And I thought it was a very sweet way to follow this story. Again, it's very humanizing. There was something so human about Kate sitting on that bench in a striped sweater and jeans. You know, she looked very familiar to anyone who's watched her for a long time. And she's, you know, pleading for space for her family, space for her treatment. And by following that with a story about how close Charles and Kate have become, I thought that was really smart. You know, again, this is a family, and it's so easy to forget that because they're, you know, the royals too. But I think that brought these two together in a really important way.
Yeah. On the other side of that coin, though, we have, you know, other members of the family, like the Sussexes, who we all know released a public statement of support for Kate while also reportedly reaching out privately. The Daily Beast's take was that this is the moment for reconciliation with the brothers, that this is the time they should come together. Do you feel like that's the case?
I thought that was the case with Charles. You know, when Charles's cancer was released, my own mother passed away of cancer many years ago. And I know that a diagnosis like that can either bring people together or it can sort of drive people further apart. And I was not surprised that Harry didn't like automatically re-enter the fold. I did see it as an opportunity. This feels different for me, you know, from everything that I understand. Harry and Charles' relationship is sort of slowly improving, but Harry and William's still remains extremely strained. And so I can't imagine that William, you know, in the midst of trying to do all this royal work that now falls on his shoulders and then take care of his wife and children, is suddenly going to see this as an opportunity to reconcile with his brother. As much as I do think that all of this points to the problems for the future of the monarchy. There's no bench here, you guys. There's nobody to step up and fill in. It's Anne and Sophie and Camilla.
There are no understudies here.
You know, on the topic of William, I've been feeling really reflective. We both have, about the fact that William has really been a target throughout all of this. Do you think that that's been fair? I mean, I can't stop thinking about William's own experiences with grief and how this is yet another moment for him. It's health related this time, but where he can't protect the most important woman in his life.
Yes, I've been thinking about him a lot too, and what this means for him and his future as king, because certainly the pressure on him right now is immense. And I do not envy him and the road ahead. I do think, though, that some of the choices that the Waleses have made, and this, you know, sort of insistence from the outset that they were going to say Kate had surgery, she was, you know, in the hospital for a long time, and now she needed the time and space to recover, that insistence on privacy, although totally understandable, and Kate and the family should have been able to have that, I think it was naive in hindsight. I think that never complain, never explain is an outdated motto in the internet age.
Yeah. Absolutely. I know I still also keep thinking about that you have to be seen to be believed mantra of Queen Elizabeth, too. Mm-hmm. It's like we went so many months without an update on anything.
Well, the problem was, and then we saw Charles, right? Yeah. And mm-hmm. So we saw Charles, and we saw Charles meet with the prime minister. We saw him walk to church. We saw him look at Get Well cards. And, you know, we didn't see Kate. And I think there's very good reasons for that. Now yes. We know, having seen her, she was clearly very sick and clearly recovering from major surgery. And I think it would be impossible to, you know, put her forth into the world with all of our expectations of what she should look like and how she should carry herself. Like, who wants to get glammed up for that?
Right. Right? Yeah.
And so I understand that, but I think that there had to have been a more creative solution there.
Yes.
To just silence this. And, you know, that edited photograph was unfortunately not it. And the broader implications of that, I've spent a lot of time thinking about the conspiracy theories of it all. And what that photo did was it fed into that machine. You know, it gave it fodder and fuel and in a really dangerous way.
Yeah, I think I DM'd you about this, Elizabeth, about the algorithms, like how scary that is, that it really does, like, that's what it brings to the top, is the really more controversial thing. So that's a bigger story, totally. But yeah, it just made me think.
And it spread so far. And I think, you know, for everybody here and everybody listening, I really truly hope that one of the takeaways here is when you're receiving information from someone on the internet, to just take a minute and think, why is that viewpoint credible? What is it about their lived experience, about their professional background? Some quality about them should make it credible in a way, not just entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very true. Applies far beyond royal news too.
Yeah. I want to go back to that Mother's Day photo really quick, because I feel like Rachel and I just can't really wrap our minds around why Kensington Palace would really let Princess Catherine take the fall for the editing, knowing what we know now. Does it bother you like it bothers us? Do you feel like that?
That is one piece of this that I can't sort of write in my head. I mean, I understand this sort of desperate attempt to stop and quiet everything with a beautiful photograph of a mother and her children on Mother's Day. You know, that said, the fact that the response was so quick and so harsh, you know, the idea of a kill notification is a very big deal, that I think that had Kensington Palace issued some sort of statement, in hindsight, it would have felt more appropriate perhaps. But I think Kate, again, I think they were trying to shut it down as quickly as possible. Yeah. The thing about that statement that I still don't understand is she did not apologize for editing that photo, nor did she say she edited that photo.
Yeah.
She said she occasionally experiments with editing and she apologized for any confusion that photo caused. And I had several people, lawyers in my DMs, pointing out that's a very important distinction here. I think they were trying to very carefully just put this issue to rest. Again, in hindsight, though, man, you know, having her name as the sole person on that and not perhaps Catherine and William together or something, I think it's hard to reconcile.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like that.
So I guess where does this leave the monarchy as we head into spring? I think it's, you know, it's, again, it's just such a unprecedented time. I keep going to that word, but, you know, we are seeing reports that Charles might pop up at Easter services and he's thinking about tripping the color, but it's really wild to think about what's ahead.
It feels so fragile, right? And it's, which is so interesting because after the death of the queen, you know, in advance of the death of the queen, there are all these questions about what the future of the monarchy held. And then she died and then Charles became king and it all sort of went on. And I was like, oh, well, they did that. Okay. They passed that baton. And we were all at the coronation together, you know, the coronation happened. And then I was like, okay, we're settling into kind of a quieter royal stretch here. There's no weddings. There's no babies. They're just going to sort of, you know, cut their ribbons and unveil their plaques and maybe take a couple tours. And then, you know, the start of the year with these, you know, two major health crises now, and the lack of a bench, you know, there's just nobody to fill in or step up. And the idea of a slimmed down monarchy sounded so sensible not too long ago, you know, as a way to be very responsible, you know, stewards of taxpayer money to just have a couple people up there. But now it's like, well, what happens? And I think it all just feels a lot more uncertain. But the bigger question I have, if I really am stepping back, is, you know, so many of us came to watch the royals because of a big celebration, like a wedding or, you know, the birth of a baby. And now they have this global audience, not because of a celebration, but because of a crisis.
Mm. Yeah.
And what does that mean for an institution that relies on attention and affection? Is there maybe an opportunity here? I don't know. Or have they now brought in a bunch of people, you know, looking for or wanting to speculate and scrutinize? I don't know. What do you guys think?
That level of scrutiny when Kate does return, I just feel like because the world is kind of holding their breath for that moment, that it really is going to feel so, I don't know, like over analyzed maybe. I just worry about that moment that we're all waiting for when she reappears, and I hope that she's able to take the time. And it does sound like she's really well from her video and she's recovering, so hopefully that's the case. What do you think, Rachel?
I mean, I think I'm just so struck by how, like, I'm trying to take less time, like kind of step away from my phone a little bit more from Instagram just to give myself space from how far this has transcended. But I feel like there was a moment last week, I think it was last week, it's all a blur, but when the cousins, like Eugenie and Zara, popped up at Cheltenham. And it was just this like, oh, like this is just polo and royals and we're talking about coats, and they were like cute cousin photos. And even the launch of American Riviera Orchard, you talked about this, the fairy tale aspect where you're just, it's aspirational and you just kind of jump in. So I think You're totally right. The lack of a bench and sort of these players to step up and augment the main players during this time is really noticed. And I hope that Kate and William really do now get the privacy that they absolutely deserve during this time and the break and time away. But it just leaves this gaping void, and who knows what's going to happen. I wonder what the strategy meetings are like at the palace.
Yeah.
I know, it's so interesting because before Friday, you know, there was this flurry of coverage that there was a team working around the clock to prepare for Kate's return. And I hope that is not the case right now. Yes. I truly hope that she has all the time she needs and all the space she needs. And, you know, there was that one picture over the weekend of the helicopter leaving Windsor and going to Amner Hall. They're like, and I thought, good, fly away.
Yes.
Fly away. I was like, just go with your beautiful family and take the time you need, because I think truly the additional toll that this has all taken on a woman who we know was already under immense pressure. It's just, again, like I felt better seeing her on Friday, you know, knowing that she was, you know, sitting there telling us this news at the same time that I hated that she had to sit there and tell us that news.
Yeah, I somehow felt like she was comforting us at the same time the pressure is like it. She's going through so much. It felt very queen-like to me where, you know, you think about those moments where Queen Elizabeth would deliver a speech and it somehow was about us watching when it's really all about Kate, and it should be about Kate right now. So I know. Well, we will obviously be staying in close contact, and we always love following all of your thoughts and perspectives on this. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thanks for having me.
Gosh, it's always so wonderful to hear from Elizabeth, especially because we've navigated a lot of those big royal moments together.
I know. I always appreciate her perspective. In the spirit of talking about the royal bench, we wanted to spend a couple minutes before we wrap this episode talking about when we are going to see more of the family soon. We've had some updates about King Charles. It is confirmed that he will be stepping out for Easter. That is the plan. Buckingham Palace released a statement that he'll lead the family for services at St. George's in Windsor on Sunday, but there will be a smaller turnout. This is to minimize contact with too many so that he can avoid crowds while he undergoes treatment and adds to his immunity and protection. Obviously, Camilla will be there. I'm expecting to see Anne. Who else are you hoping to see? I know that the Wales is absolutely no for sure that none of them will be there, but who else do you think we might expect?
I hope, and after you mentioned the Cheltenham cousinly love, the pictures of Zara and Beatrice and Eugenie that we see all of them, those familiar faces, Sophie, Edward, I feel like it actually will be a pretty decent turnout, except for the Waleses.
Yeah. I know, I was reading some coverage, and this really is on the same level as the Christmas walk for the royal family. And so it is a monumental moment. I know anything can change, right? We absolutely know that. But I think it's amazing that we've gotten confirmation that Charles will be participating. We're also seeing a lot of headlines about the summer diary for the king and how everyone's feeling pretty optimistic that plans are in motion. Also, this feels very COVID-y. We've been talking about COVID a lot this episode. Just that summer is a moment when there are less airborne germs, more opportunities to be outside. And so that is also in his favor for what he is going through, like Trooping the Color. It happens outside. I don't know if you saw this, Roberta, and I listened to the whole thing, and I encourage everyone listening to go do this, but Peter Phillips, who's the son of Princess Anne, sat down for a rare interview with Sky News Australia this week. It's about 20 minutes. And he talks about the king and how he's feeling at this current moment. It's a great insight. I wanted to play this clip.
I was waiting for you to bring this up because I'm so glad that you were able to break it down for us. So yes, let's hear it.
Now, moving on to the king, we know he's had a challenging couple of months. Is he in good spirits? He still seems in recent weeks to getting back amongst it to the extent that he can.
Listen, he's in good spirits. I think ultimately he's hugely frustrated. He's frustrated that he can't get on and do everything that he wants to be able to do. But he's very pragmatic. He understands that there's a period of time that he really needs to focus on himself. But at the same time, he is always pushing his staff and everybody and his doctors and nurses to be able to say, actually, can I do this? Can I do that? So I think the overriding message would be that he's obviously very keen to get back to a form of normality, and is probably frustrated that recovery is you know, taking a little longer than probably he would want it to.
Yeah, I mean, I think just hearing that first person, you know, close to the king perspective on what Charles is going through, it also is so in line with what we know about Charles. I think about what Harry revealed in Spare, how he would kind of fall asleep with his face to his papers at his desk and how work-oriented he is. You know, Peter also talks about the intense short-term pressure on his mom Anne, Sophie and Edward, and Queen Camilla right now. It actually sounds like he's worried in the way that all children of older parents would be about Anne's age. She's in her 70s, but she is still doing those like 24-hour overseas trips, all in the name of the job. Anne is all about the job, all about the job, which we know.
Yeah, she's really carrying the torch along with Camilla and the Edinburghs. So it's just, it's a lot on their plates.
He also reveals, I thought this was interesting, that the last thing on her mind at any moment is column inches. That's what he says, column inches. So any press coverage of her work.
It's all about the people she meets. I love that about her.
Yes. I guess I just wanted to close with a bright spot. We got a great and beautiful birthday pic of Princess Eugenie. It feels again like a lifetime ago that we were talking about her birthday coming up. That was Thursday before Kate's announcement. We have a picture of her holding Ernie and the caption, "The best gift of all are my boys. So on this birthday, I'm cherishing family and loved ones."
I do love this photo of Eugenie and that hat band. I need to shop it right now.
I think it's sadly so new, but over $600. So not in my budget, sadly.
No.
It's time for the Royal Highs and Lows.
All right, before we adjourn the royal pod, our highs and lows. My low this week is just conspiracy theories still happening. I'm just really freaked out by that. They never seem to rest. People are still saying it's not Kate in the video. The Guardian published an article with the headline, "Conspiracy theories tagged hashtag KateGate grow despite Kensington Palace video." Really strange to me. At this point, I'm just like worried for society, humanity, our future children in general. It's reminds me of this Mark Twain quote, "A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is still tying its shoes."
It's terrifying, honestly. I feel like for future generations too. And I'm so curious how like schools will teach understanding of it all, like what's facts, all that stuff. My low is this Puff Daddy lawsuit and the fact that it mentions Harry.
You say Puff Daddy.
Wait, is it Puff Daddy or is it
P. Diddy? I don't know.
Puff Daddy was like the original.
I love that you say that. That's fine.
I just want to go on a soapbox for a minute and say, do not headline about this story. I've been getting so many texts being like, oh no, Harry. But this is a situation where you really need to read the details. Basically, Harry's name is mentioned in this 73-page court document that includes a litany of sexual assault allegations against Sean Combs. But the reference to Harry is simply to give an example of the type of people who Sean Combs might have known or had access to. It is not a confirmation of involvement. In fact, Harry met Sean Combs only once and with William in 2007 after he performed at the concert for Diana. And many publications have confirmed that there have been no other encounters. I just feel like you read the headline, you move on, you take what you want to know, but you need to read the details here. It's my low.
Yeah, I also am going to make this my low too, because the cropping of the photo, cropping William out,
yes,
and also just like he's mentioned once in 73 pages. It's just, it's horrible.
And as an example, it's not a fact. Yeah.
Joint low for sure. My high this week is Downton Abbey 3 is officially in the works. Imelda Staunton, who we know and love as our Queen Elizabeth in the last two seasons of The Crown, she laid her career on the line to confirm to BBC Radio that, yes, there is a third Downton Abbey movie.
Was she not supposed to say that?
The interviewer said, "Will you get in trouble?" And Imelda said, "I don't care."
Wow. Go Imelda. I love it.
I love it. On the one hand, I will say how much story is really left to tell here. But on the other, this is my marvel. I hope they never stop making Downton Abbey films.
I have to say, I recently rewatched Downton Abbey 2 on a plane flight, and I was delighted. Like, it is such a good movie. So bring it on.
I will put it on, like, in the background when my mom and I are just hanging out. Like, it's just such a good movie to, whatever.
It's delightful.
It's our marvel.
It is our marvel. All right, my high ending on something that is a little bit more serious and somber, but just James Middleton, his post on Instagram and the quote that he said, the image he shared of Kate after the statement was shared last Friday, the quote he said, "Over the years, we have climbed many mountains together. As a family, we will climb this one with you too." I guess I just was thinking about that is exactly what you would want to hear when you're going through something, just that sort of I'm there by your side. It was so poetic and beautiful. And coming from him alongside that image, it really was a beautiful thing to see on Friday evening.
And I think also, too, it's a reminder of how many other people are involved in Kate's life other than the royal family.
How many people this affects. Yeah.
All right. Well, just a reminder before we close, please leave us a royal rating. We would love 5 stars. It's only helps us, and we love reading your reviews like this one, which says, "You did such a beautiful report on the news of Kate's cancer diagnosis. So heartfelt. Thank you." It was really heartfelt because we were in the moment. It just happened. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm so glad that we were able to do that. Reminder to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast. Send us an email, info@gallerypodcast.com. Until next week.
Episode 201.
That's right.
God save the pod.
Her Majesties of Royally Obsessed have retired for this episode. God save the pod. And if you fancy the podcast, give Royally Obsessed the royal rating of 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast and join our Facebook group, Royally Obsessed. Royally Obsessed is a Gallery Podcast production.